This podcast is part of a series of podcasts devoted to the values that God gave to our churches. In this teaching, we look at the value of generosity. I stumbled across Psalm 49, and when I did so, I immediately knew that it was for the podcast on generosity. And so without wasting any time, grab a Bible, open it up to Psalm 49, and let's dig into it. This is what it says to begin. Hear this, all you peoples. Listen, all you who live in this world, both low and high alike, rich and poor alike. My mouth will speak words of wisdom. The utterance from my heart will give understanding. I will turn my ear to a proverb. With the harp, I will expound my riddle. In the opening verses, we see here that the writer is wanting to provide for us wisdom. It's a typical kind of wisdom genre way of speaking. He says here, it's a riddle. It's a problem. Proverb, and you notice it's for everyone, for the low and high, it's for the rich and poor alike. Everyone's to be included in here. So the question is, what is the wisdom that the psalm writer wants us to hear? Well, that's what he goes on to say next. Verse 5. Why should I fear when evil days come, when wicked deceivers surround me, those who trust in their wealth and boast of their great riches? No man can redeem the life of another or give to God a ransom for him. The ransom for a life is costly. No payment is ever enough that he should live on forever and not see decay. For all can see that wise men die, the foolish and the senseless alike perish, and leave their wealth to the others. Their tombs will remain their houses forever, their dwellings for endless generations, though they had named lands after themselves. But man, despite his riches, does not endure. He is like the beasts that perish. This is the fate of those who trust in themselves and of their followers who approve their sayings. Like sheep, they are destined for the grave, and death will feed on them. The upright will rule over them in the morning. Their forms will decay in the grave, far from their princely mansions. But God will redeem my life from the grave. He will surely take me to himself. Do not be overawed when a man grows rich, when the splendor of his house increases, for he will take nothing with him when he dies. His splendor will not descend with him. Though while he lived, he counted himself blessed, and men praise you when you prosper. He will join the generation of his fathers, who will never see the light of life. A man who has riches without understanding is like the beasts that perish. Quite the psalm. First pass through. It's clear that the wisdom and understanding that the psalm writer wants to bring in the psalm has obviously something to do with money and riches. It's a common theme. He comes through it again and again. It's also clear, first pass through, that the psalm has something to do with the themes of life, or conversely on the other side of that, the themes of death, so the finiteness of life, and even something you could see in there about life beyond the grave, about eternal life. And when we combine these two observations in particular together, what we stumble upon really is the great point of the psalm. That is that the psalm writer is wanting to provide us wisdom regarding the greatest of all questions, which is this. What is the pathway to life? Or on the other side of that, what is it that leads to death? And how is it, as he incorporates here, how is it that money somehow plays in with these grand questions of life and of death? And as we explore the question, in my own mind anyways, ringing around in the background is this gnawing refrain that keeps coming back to me from Proverbs 14, where Solomon wrote, "There is a way that seems right to a man, But in the end, it leads to death. So how does the psalm answer this question? What is the way to life? Well, first of all, as is often the case in scriptures, and particularly wisdom literature, what the psalm writer does is he turns the world's common sense on its head. The world tells us that the only way really to life is through riches. And in fact, it defines the one that is successful in life as the one who has the most, or who is the biggest, or who is the brightest. Just the other day, I was driving along in the car and I was listening to the radio. And the commentator made just an offhanded comment that was quite betraying, but the person she was referencing, she said about him that he was wildly successful. And the context was that he was wildly successful because he was wildly wealthy. And the spirit within me just kind of froze that moment in time. I thought, wildly successful, isn't that interesting? But do we know anything about his life, or his family, or his friendships, his joy, his peace, how he procured that wealth? And would any of these, if they were answered, still attest to him being, quote-unquote, wildly successful? I mean, for all we know about that man, he acquired that wealth through deviant means. Or for all we know about that man, at night he goes home to an empty house, his family long estranged. Interesting, though, that he was wildly successful. But such is the common sense of our world. Success, life, is measured by our wealth. And again, we hear those words. There is a way that seems right to a man. Well, the psalm turns all of this on its head. And what we see in the wisdom that the writer sets out is that wealth, and particularly the boasting or the trust in wealth, look at verse 6 and verse 12 and verse 13, or also the possession of wealth apart from wisdom, is actually the pathway to our ruin, to our death. Listen again what he says as he concludes the psalm. A man who has riches without understanding, without wisdom, is like the beasts that perish. And the death he means here, the perishing that he means here, is really, I mean, the withering, the ruin of a soul in this life, the decaying of the soul in this life that, as he would say here, carries on even in the life to come. Consider what he says again in verse 12 to 14. But man, despite his riches, does not endure. He is like the beasts that perish. This is the fate of those who trust in themselves and of their followers of who approve of their sayings. Like sheep, they are destined for the grave, and death will feed on them. The upright will rule over them in the morning. Their forms will decay in the grave, far from their princely mansions. It's so ironic, really. All the weight that our world puts on acquiring more. This is success. But in the end, the psalm writer invites us into real wisdom, God's wisdom, to understand that none of it actually leads to life, but actually in the end, it does just the opposite. And this is why the writer, as he continues to unfold his wisdom, calls those that are listening to him to this in verse 16. He says this, "So don't be overawed when a man grows rich, when the splendor of his house increases, for he will take nothing with him when he dies." It's kind of like that old joke. Have you ever seen a U-Haul being pulled behind a hearse? "His splendor will not descend with him. Though while he lived, he counted himself blessed, and men praise you when you prosper, he will in the end join the generation of his fathers, who will never see the light of life." And such is the harsh ending to this side of the coin in the psalm. The riches we set ourselves on, none of it lasts, none of it comes with us to the grave, and in the end, the pursuit of it in our life might just be the very thing that actually leads us to darkness and to death. And it's at this point the wisdom of the psalm just calls us into this deep gut check. That's what wisdom does. It calls us to evaluate ourselves. Have we somehow, even unknowingly, been caught up on the pathway that seems right, but in fact, it is actually withering us? It's killing us. Now, just to be clear, it's not necessarily the acquisition of wealth that is the problem. Right? Though the prophets tell us that if we acquire wealth through unjust means, that is a big problem. Nor do I think we should feel guilty if our businesses are proving profitable or if our employees, our employers are rewarding us for good work. I mean, if anything, I think these things we can and we should receive as gifts from God. That said, though, as we look inside ourselves, the psalm invites us still to be ruthlessly honest with ourselves. Is the wealth that we are gaining slowly withering our souls? Is the pursuit of it, or the pursuit of building our businesses or our employment, is the pursuit of it corrupting us and somehow leading us to our death? And the way that we approach money, is it leading others around us to death as well as they become caught up in our webs of influence? Are we slowly coming to lust for it, to delight in it, to boast in it? Are we quietly, even unknowingly, beginning to trust in it and our own abilities to make it and to provide for ourselves? This, verse 6 says, if you notice, is the real heart of the problem. Oh, but it can be so deceiving. It can all be so confusing. We think to ourselves so quickly, but I don't trust in wealth. Really? How do we know? How do you know? How can I be so certain? How can you? Why don't you ask yourself these questions? What is it that you think about? What do you strive for in life? What preoccupies your daydreaming? What preoccupies your to-do list? What do you worry about? What do you secretly, quietly lust for? Crave. Friends, the warning here is too stern to not be ruthless with these questions. And again, we hear Solomon. There is a way that seems right to a man. Well, most of the wisdom is oriented around the negative side of the coin. The high point of the psalm actually finds its wisdom on the positive. If there is a way that seems right to a man, then what is the way that seems right to the Lord? In verse 7 to 9, the writer reminds us that no amount of money is enough to buy life. But the question that remains unanswered then is, what then can? What can in this life bring us to life? I mean, life, abundant life, life. And the answer that he swings back to in short, in this short little verse, is one of actually the greatest verses in all of the Psalms. And this is what he says in verse 15. But God will redeem my life from the grave. And he will surely take me to himself. You see, it is the Lord that redeems life.
You have Selah. Redeemed my soul from the pit of emptiness. You have redeemed my soul from death. You have redeemed my soul from the pit of emptiness. You have redeemed my soul from death.
It's the Lord then that redeems life. It's the Lord that gives life. And the untold injunction here is that wisdom involves a life of setting ourselves on him, trusting in him, looking to him, seeing him, loving him above all else. And the promise is that as we do this, he will surely take us to himself. The one who is the giver of life in the end will give us life. A man who has riches without understanding is like the beasts that perish. What is the wisdom then that we need? It's that our riches ultimately amount to nothing. All the scrambling and the stress that we put on acquiring them in this life, ultimately it arrives us nowhere. And in the end, it might even be the thing that leads us to death. Only God can give us life. And only his pathway is the pathway to life. So you say, well, what does all this have to do with generosity? Well, that's simple. The way I see it is that generosity is actually the antidote to what money can do to us. When we give it away, we render it powerless. No longer does it control us. No longer do we control it. In fact, it's out of our hands. And when we give it away, what happens is that we announce two things to God. First of all, we say to him, I want you, God, more than this money. And secondly, we say to him, and for what I give away, I trust you that you will provide for our needs. The other thing is that when we give it away, we also make an announcement to ourselves. We say, I don't need this. The world tells me that I do. It tells me that I should have more and more of it. But the fact is that I really don't need to. And that the further thing is that this is not actually the pathway to life. God is. He is the redeemer of the soul. There's more, though, I think, about being generous. You see, Scripture makes it clear that when we follow the ways of God, it is there, on His ways, in His pathway, that we find life. And part of His revealed ways for how we are to live as people, it always has been this, is that we are to be a people who are generous. From the whole story of God's people, He's always said, I want you to be a people that give the first fruits, give. And so as we are generous, not only do we render it money powerless over us, but we actually set ourselves on the pathways of God. And in this, it's there that we discover life, because the ways that God has intended to live for us to live, like being generous, are not things of burden, but they are things actually that God has inclined to us to be gifts for us. When we walk the ways of God, it's there that we find that life becomes life. And our souls become quickened to life. There is a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death. On the other hand, there is a way that seems right to God, and in the end we discover that it gives breath to life. I say to us again today, let's be a people of life. Let's be a people that render money powerless over our souls, and instead let's choose to be generous. The upside-down wisdom of the Scriptures tells us that it's actually here that we become wildly successful.
Money! Get back!